ते वासुदेवायम् ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 9, Text 16, 17. I'll do the Sanskrit for the 16. Yes, I know. I meant by 17, the English would be done. Pranmukeshu pavishteshu sureshu ditijeshu cha dupamodita shalayam dushtayam malyadipakaya pranmukhe shupavishteshu sureshu ditijeshu cham dupamodita shalayam Jastayam Maljadipakaya Pranmukeshu Pavishteshu Sureshu Ditijeshu Cha Dupamodita Shalayam Jastayam Maljadipakaya Ladies, please. Prakmuheshu, facing east. Upavishteshu, were sitting on their respective seats. Sureshu, all the demigods. Ditijeshu, the demons. Cha, also. Dupa Amodita Shalayam, in the arena, which was full of the smoke of incense. Jushtayam, fully decorated. Malya Dipakaiha, with flower garlands and lamps. I believe that's the last word in that verse. Let's see. Translation. O King, as the demigods and demons sat facing east in an arena fully decorated with flower garlands and lamps and fragrant with the smoke of incense, that woman, dressed in a most beautiful sari, her ankle bells tinkling, entered the arena, walking very slowly because of her big, low hips. Her eyes were restless due to youthful pride. Her breasts were like water jugs. Her thighs resembled the trunks of elephants, and she carried a water pot in her hand. I'm going on to the next translation. Her attractive nose and cheeks and her ears, adorned with golden earrings, made her face very beautiful. As she moved, her sari's border on her breasts moved slightly aside. When the demigods and demons saw these beautiful features of Mohini Murti, who was glancing at them and slightly smiling, they were all completely enchanted. Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks here that Mohini Murti is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a feminine form, and that the Goddess of Fortune is her associate. This form assumed by the Personality of Godhead challenged the Goddess of Fortune. The Goddess of Fortune is beautiful, but if the Lord accepts the form of a woman, he surpasses the Goddess of Fortune in beauty. It is not that the Goddess of Fortune, being female, is the most beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful that he can excel any beautiful Goddess of Fortune by assuming a female form. Om Agina Timirandasya Gananjana Chalakaya Chakshur Unmaditam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet and pray for the blessings of all Vaishnavas, that I may say something useful and beneficial for everyone here, including myself. So here we have a very interesting situation. Mohini Murti, who is none other than Lord Sri Krishna, is walking very gracefully in front of both the demigods and the demons. There's a separation, by the way. They're not sitting right next to one another. There's a reasonable distance between them, so that the demigods are in one area and the demons are in another area. So she's walking past them, maybe somewhat like some of these models walk when they go on the walkway displaying the wares of the different manufacturers of various types of clothing. They have a very, very enchanting, sophisticated attractive way of walking. And they teach them that, I think, in the charm schools. Is it not? Something like that. So they walk. She's walking in a very, very beautiful way, often referred to or compared to a swan walking, with grace, with sweetness, with allure. And she's looking at all of the men there, and she's smiling slightly at them. So when she smiles that way, the demons especially, they are very much enlivened. Her beauty is so ravishing that they just, each and every one of them wants to make her his wife. So entranced are they, so compelled are they, so smitten are they. They can't help but not just looking at her, but gawking at her. When a woman is so beautiful, your eyes open up wider than normally, more like, rather than, you know, ordinary. And the mouth opens up too. That's called a gawk. G-A-W-K. So, interesting thing here is that in the purport, which I'd like to talk a little about, that I read, it's mentioned that Rohini, Mohini Murti is even more beautiful than the goddess of fortune. And sometimes a person may say, but how can that be? You know, Krishna is a man, and generally men are not as beautiful as women. I mean, women have the features which are so attractive, you know, their eyes and the way they walk. And they have curves, whereas men are a little bit more square, you know, curves from the hips and the waist, you know. And curves are more beautiful than straight lines. It's just a fact. That's why, well, I won't go into that. So so therefore, it's only natural that they are practically like wolves with their tongues hanging out. And thing is this, is that why would Krishna be more beautiful than Mohini Murti? But that's the way it's stated in the scriptures, that Krishna is the source of everything. He's the source of all beauty. He's the source of all power. He's the source of all love. He's the source of all goodness. Is the source of all wealth. In Krishna, everything is to be found. All the opulences of beauty and wealth and strength and fame and knowledge and renunciation, all this is what Krishna is. Krishna is Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. All-knowing, ever-blissful, door needs to be oiled. Sounds like a baby crying. So, so this is what Krishna is. So is it not natural for us all, subconsciously or intuitively, to desire to connect with that which is most beautiful, that which is most wealthy, that which is most powerful? So when a man sees a beautiful woman or a woman sees a beautiful man, basically the soul is looking for that supreme beautiful man or that supreme beautiful woman who is Krishna. It does not know that consciously, but unconsciously the attraction is there, no less than the attraction, for example, between iron filings and the magnet. The iron filings automatically go towards the magnet. They don't think, should I go, should I not go? They're drawn, they're instinctually pulled. So similarly, when a man sees a beautiful woman or a woman sees a very handsome man, we're drawn, we're pulled, because within us all we are trying to somehow connect with that supreme beautiful one. which is Krishna. As I said, we may not know that consciously. But unconsciously, the soul, it knows that's where it has to go. So it takes a, you might say, a lesser than perfect Krishna. Because no man in the material world can be as beautiful as Krishna. No woman in the material world can be as beautiful as Krishna. But we still want that beautiful one. And we want to associate with that beauty. It's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. One who is not connected with the Supreme Lord in consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? There can't be. So each and every living entity who has left the eternal world, left Krishna, left the associates of Krishna, although every one of us is connected with Krishna, we cannot help but be connected. It's like the rays of the sun are connected to the source, the sun. So we living entities, being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, are all connected to Krishna, but we may not be connected in consciousness. By leaving the eternal world, leaving the spiritual world, we left the consciousness of Krishna in order to become a Krishna unto ourselves. In other words, we want to be all beautiful. We want to be all knowing. We want to be all knowledgeable. We want to be all famous. And we want to be worshipped. We want to be honored. We want to be glorified. We want to be applauded. We want all of this. That's what the material world is all about. That's what you go to school for. So how can I be admired? How can I be attractive to others? How can I be applauded on a stage or even off the stage? Why do people go and get plastic surgery for their faces? To look beautiful. Why to look beautiful? They want to be looked at. They want to be attractive. They want to be admired. They want to be Krishna. That's what we're here for. And the rub of it all, or the downside of it all, is that the more you try to become Krishna, the more envy you get from the outside world. While you may have your fan club, and thousands of people may applaud you, and may honor you, and glorify you, and look up to you, still there are so many who envy you and wish they could be above you or better than you. And then some people actually say nasty things about you. So when you think you're so beautiful, you're so knowledgeable, you're so famous, you're so wonderful, and somebody says something nasty about you, you feel crushed because your pride is so, so high up there. You're actually believing all the things that people say, not realizing that in 25, 35 years, you're not going to look so beautiful. In most cases, we'll look like a bunch of old hags or old codgers, limping along, bent over bodies, hanging jaws, with all kinds of disorders and diseases. You wake up with a stiff back, takes you a half hour to get out of bed. No, I haven't reached that stage yet, but I'm on the way. So, it happens. So, but in the moment of that heroic time, one is thinking oneself is so great. And yet as soon as somebody says something nasty or something which makes the person feel inferior, it's like the big blimp of an ego is diffused. It's crushed, and one feels so insignificant, one feels so small, so unimportant, on the one hand. On the other hand, you want to kill that person. Why? Because he has said something that has deflated the ego, and the living entity in the material world lives for the inflation, not deflation, inflation of the false ego. He goes where people will honor him, people will glorify him, people will look up to him. People will applaud him. This is what he likes to associate in that situation, so that the ego can continue to expand. It can continue to inflate. The This is a very sorry situation, very terrible situation, because, as I said, when old age comes, your great intelligence, if you have dementia, will fail. Or you become a big politician. Most of the time, by the time you become 65, 70, you can't think as clearly as you did before, and you can't be a big politico anymore. And if you're a star basketball player, by the time you hit 35, 40 years old, you're finished. No longer will you hear the great hurrahs of the crowd every time you sink, one of those dead ringers, do they call them? So it lasts for a short amount of time. And all this time we are accumulating this bigger and bigger ego. So when finally we no longer have that beauty, we no longer have that knowledge, we no longer have that intelligence, When it's no longer there, what do we do? When we're reduced to zero and we've been at 100% for so many years and slowly but truly we come down, 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 we feel like we have no identity. We feel like we've been robbed of our sense of self, because our sense of self is a false sense of self. It's the idea that I'm somebody, I'm something, I'm important, when in actuality it's a very temporary state of affairs. And generally speaking, people cannot see into the future, don't want to know the future, don't want to hear about that you're going to be zero at some point in time. They don't want to hear that. And the result is that one goes on in the illusion. And gradually, as the illusion collapses, the person feels miserable. And what happens then? Well, he's got to go on antidepressants. You're depressed. You're miserable. Or even worse, antipsychotics. Because you still believe you're still that person. That you're still sinking the ball into the hoop. You're still running for that touchdown. You're still parading in front of all the millions of political followers on television. You still think you're in the Olympics winning 8 medals, but you're not anymore. You're lost, you're finished, you're gone. Accept it. Recognize it. No, I'm still that person. This is the great misfortune. Any one of you, for school, I know we had to study a very interesting play. I still recommend it for devotees. It was called Death of a Salesman. Anybody remember that play, Death of a Salesman? Really, it won every award you can ever imagine. It even went to China. They played it there. So it was the story of Willy Loman, who was a salesman, and he had all these illusions that I'm talking about now. He thought he was great. He thought he was wonderful. And finally, he reached, 65, 75 years old. They said, okay, Willy, you've been on the road long enough. It's time for you to go. Take a rest, and that's it. He could not accept this. And so what he did is he imposed this false identity on one of his sons named Biff. So Biff generally didn't want anything to do with his father because he knew his father was crazy. He was a little bit of like a devotee. He liked the wide open spaces, time to think, time to introspect, time to consider what the real purpose of life is. So, he would go out to the West sometime where the horses are and get a job on a ranch or something. Anyway, he came back home to New York. This is where this play takes place. So his father, it just happened to be that Biff, when he was in high school, he was a great football player. So his father could not forget the fact that he had greatness in him. So he encouraged, he pestered his son, please, why don't you take a job where I've just been fired and show him that the Loman boys are still active, still have that old fire in us? So he says, well, it's not exactly what I really want, Dad. He says, no, you just get out there and sell just the way I did. So finally, his father got to the point of convincing him to go and take the job, at least to get interviewed by the boss. And he had the interview. And then he left. But what did he do when he left? He stole the pen of the boss. Very interesting subconscious action. Because he wanted to be called a thief so that he wouldn't get the job. Because he never wanted to work in that kind of an environment. So finally, he had the showdown, or the climax scene, where his father said, "You did that to spite me." And it's a very fascinating climactic scene, and where the son tells the father off, and he says, "You were never but an old drummer." Salesmen were called drummers in those days, who just landed in the ash can. And now you want to take me and put me in the ash can also. You're an illusion. You never were great. You never will be great. You're worthless. You're useless. And you want me to be the same. I just want the open skies. I want the ranch. I want the horses. I want the sweet smell of the earth. I don't want this horrible, nasty, disgusting office that you want to put me in. So wake up to it, Willie. Wake up. I love you, but I cannot love what you love. And this was very eye-opening. Anyway, long story short, what happened was that Willie, all he could think of, all he could remember, because he thought his son was against him and spiting him, and he said, "Biff loves me. He loves me. He really loves me." Anyway, he got into his car, and he was driving, and he was always having these fantasies of his greatness, his days when he was wonderful and people were applauding him and he was the top salesman. And he couldn't get that out of his mind. And he kept thinking while he was driving, "Biff loves me. Biff, he loves me. He loves me." And then what would you have? Boom, crack up, crash, end of scene, end of life, finished. So this is very tragic. It's very tragic because people generally today, they want to be this great person. Because they don't know that there is a great person, and if we try to serve that great person, we love that great person, surrender to that great person, give our all to that great person, as so many of us did for the last few days. Everyone was engaged in Krishna's service. Everyone was pleased with Krishna, was thinking of Krishna, and everyone was happy in doing this. And the happiness was coming from within. We didn't need some external applause. We didn't need some external honor. We didn't need some external celebration or glorification. We were feeling Krishna's pleasure within the heart. And feeling it in the heart, it was the incentive for us to go on, to move forward, to continue serving Krishna, knowing full well that although in the past we may have committed many offenses and senses and sins, that didn't matter to Krishna. All that mattered to him is that we're trying our best, we're doing our very best in order to please him, to satisfy him, to bring a bigger smile on his face than perhaps it was a few minutes ago or a few days ago. And that's all that matters to Krishna. And he wants to express his reciprocation, express his appreciation. And what does he do? He makes us feel inwardly joyful, inwardly happy, inwardly satisfied. So that the devotee walks around with a smile on his face and a glint in his eyes. He can't help that because that's what Krishna does to us. So all those persons, which Prabhupada often referred to as those fools, who are looking for that happiness, that joy, that fulfillment, that satisfaction, that ultimate beauty. We find it in Krishna. You look at Krishna, whether you're a male or a female, you can admire the beauty of Krishna. In fact, it was a fact that many men looked at Krishna's beautiful face, looked at his hands, looked at his feet, and just was mesmerized looking at them because he was so stunningly beautiful. Doesn't mean, see, when there's sexual aspect attached to it, then it matters, well, I'm a male and he's a male, I can't admire him. But when there's no sexual aspect, you can admire any beauty. Man can look at a woman and not just admire the beauty for its own sake because it was made by Krishna. It was created by Krishna, constructed by Krishna. And all those beautiful parts which come together so symmetrically were composed by Krishna. And we can admire Krishna for his great handiwork. You look across the street and see these beautiful trees and how symmetrically they're put together. And you love them. They are so admirable to just look at, to stare at. And when the wind is not blowing, they stand still. And it just evokes within our soul a sense of peace. Can't help it. Or you see a lake and there's no wind blowing. And the lake, you look at it, you stare at it, and you cannot help but feel peaceful. These are all intimations of the peace of Krishna consciousness. These are all creations of Krishna. And when they're seen for what they are, as creations of Krishna, beautiful creations of Krishna, lovable creations of Krishna, that makes us all the more love Krishna, all the more admire Krishna, all the more venerate Krishna, all the more want to surrender to Krishna, all the more want to sacrifice for Krishna, because he is so beautiful, he is wealthy, he's powerful, he has everything. And we love him simply because, not for those things I just mentioned, but because he is so merciful. In spite of our offenses and our wrongs, in spite of our the things, our evils or our sins, he disregards all that and gives us a fresh start and enables us to come back home, back to Godhead, enables us to come to him and welcomes us. Unless we are connected with the Supreme Lord in consciousness, we're all connected. The demons are connected. The demigods are connected. But to be connected in consciousness is another matter, and it does take activity. It takes work. It takes discipline. It takes devotional service. It takes devotional activities. Otherwise, one is merely connected unconsciously, and that's not enough. I remember a very interesting story. It just occurred to me while I was looking at the deities a few minutes ago. I remember when I was a little boy, 4 years old, and it was a steaming hot day in the Bronx, New York. And so, of course, the family generally would go to the beach, Orchard Beach. And so we went to Orchard Beach. The lines, I remember the parking, it took an hour to get to a parking spot. It was so long, and it was so hot and so humid. You know, 90 degrees humidity, that's really hot. So you bathe in your sweat, so to speak, and everybody wanted to cool off and go to the Long Island Sound, I believe. So we got there and put up our umbrella and so forth. And then my mother said she's going to that area, the refreshment stand, which was indoors, and she was going to get some things for us. So I wanted to go with her. So she said, okay, and she held my hand. I could still see it like it was happening just a few moments ago. So she was at, you know, waiting at the counter there, and waiting for her next. And I was a little restless because I don't like, you know, children don't like to stand in one place. They like to keep moving, like to keep doing things. So I started wandering away. I wandered left, I wandered right, and the place was packed. People, I was so big, and all I kept seeing is thighs and legs all over the place. And finally, I couldn't find my way back to my mother. And I was looking here and looking there, and I couldn't find her. I was lost, and I started crying. And then there was a police officer. He was there. He says, "What's wrong, Sonny?" I said, "I can't find my mommy." So he says, "Well, I'll help you find her." He said, "No, she's lost. I can't find her." So he said, "No, we'll find her. Don't worry." So I was crying. He took me by the hand. I still remember. And we were walking I'd say it was about 30 yards away, outside, on the boardwalk. And then there was this big cage. And he opened the door of the cage. I was looking at that. And then I looked down, and I saw there was about 5 boys and girls sitting towards the end of the cage. And they were all bawling. They were all screaming and crying, "I want my mommy! I want my mom!" It was the lost and found for children. So I figured I was just about ready to stop crying for a while, and then they were crying. So I sat down with them, and I cried with them. We were all crying. "I want my mommy," you know. So then a police officer said, "Don't worry, we're going to find your mommy. We're going to make a big announcement." They had loudspeakers throughout the whole beach. So they made this announcement: "With the mother and/or father of Alan Zupnik, a blonde, platinum blonde child with big blue eyes, please come to the lost and found and claim your child." So they made this announcement a few times, and then finally, about 10 minutes later, there was my mother. She came into the lost and found, and I saw her, and I ran up to her, and she picked me up, and she said, "What happened to you? Where did you go? What happened? What did you do?" "I don't know. Where did you go?" I was telling her like that. So I felt during the period while I was in the holding cell, if you will, that I was alone. I was insecure. I had no one. I was uncertain. I wasn't sure what I'd ever see my mommy again. It was a completely helpless feeling. It's the feeling that the living entity has because he's disconnected from his supreme mommy, his supreme mother, his supreme father. Everyone insecure, everyone uncertain, everyone doubtful, everyone worried. Why? Because they're disconnected in consciousness from he who will give them courage and strength and confidence and hope and faith and all the things that we need to be truly and genuinely and genuinely and fulfillingly happy. Krishna has all that. But because people are unconscious, although we're giving out these millions of books to make them conscious of the fact that there is a means to be truly secure, that you can get your mother back, you can get your father back. And if you don't, you will always be insecure, always be uncertain, always be doubtful, always be shaky, always putting on the air, putting on the pretense of being somebody, something you're not, when really at heart, deep down, you're so insecure. I used to work in the movie industry as a movie extra, and I would get a chance to work up close to all these movie stars who I used to just be so much admiring of them. They were so famous. And then I would get to see them up close and see how there was, right after the take meaning they take the shot, and then there's a pause, and they would light up a cigarette, take some more coffee, and I could see that these people were very nervous, very anxious, and sometimes it was subject to anger. I said, these people are just the same as people on my block. The only difference is they have more money, which means it seems like they got more problems as a result of more money. So I was, I came to a very firm and very, a very firm and very hard to accept a realization that people who are famous are just as miserable as people who are, in fact, even more so, because they have more problems, they have more responsibility. So it opened my eyes to don't try to become a movie star, because probably you will. It's not. If you're not one now, you're never going to be one. That was pretty much the realization that I had. And it didn't matter, because I really did that to raise funds for my tape ministry, which actually was very good because I had to pay an engineer to take over this. So anyway, to wind the whole point up is, again, connection. As soon as I was reconnected with my mother, the child now, I felt secure. I felt I had purpose. I felt I had support. I felt I had somebody behind me. I knew I was going to eat. I knew I was going to get clothing. I knew I was going to get some education. I knew I was going to get some of my favorite dessert. I was going to get all the things that I liked because my mommy was there. I was connected consciously with that which I felt was the source of my security, which in fact she really wasn't, because she was being maintained by Krishna. But I didn't know that. We don't know that when we're children. So in the same sense, the more we connect with Krishna, the more we chant Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The more we chant, we connect with Krishna. And the more we connect with Krishna, the more secure we become, the more fulfilled we become, the more satisfied we become, the more blissful we become, the more peaceful we become. It's slight, it's subtle, but after many years you realize where you once were and where you are today. And all you can say is, my dear Lord Krishna, thank you so much. My dear Srila Prabhupada, thank you so much. Because without your mercy, if you hadn't come here, I'd be like everybody else, just putting on the dog of making a big pretense of that I'm somebody, which I'm not, trying to make everybody think I'm important and valuable and great, when in my heart, I'm just a frightened little child without his mommy. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Ki. Are there any questions or comments that anyone would like to make? No? No questions, no comments? Fine. Have a nice breakfast. Hare Krishna.